Australia bans an ad. Britain bans a sperm bank. The Taliban hide behind children. Women outnumber men on campus. And two churches lurch leftward. This is September 14, 2010. I'm Albert Moeller, and this is The Briefing, a daily analysis of news and events from a Christian worldview. It is unusual when a television advertisement is banned before it airs, but this is the case in Australia, where a television advertisement that would have contended for the right of euthanasia has been banned from the nation's television screens. The ad featured an actor playing a man with a terminal illness, asking to be allowed to die with dignity. The Guardian, that is one of London's major newspapers, is reporting on this case because there is a great deal of interest in euthanasia in the nation of Britain, as well as in Australia, which is united to the United Kingdom, of course, as being a British Commonwealth nation. According to The Guardian, the last time a similar advertisement was shown on Australian television, this was more than 10 years ago. Now get this, it featured a woman suffering from what she believed was terminal bladder cancer. She, too, was pleading to be allowed to die, but as it happened, she went into remission. The case became a rallying cry for the anti-euthanasia lobby rather than for the right to die movement. Now, what's going on here in Australia and in the United Kingdom and increasingly in the United States is an open call for a right to euthanasia. The language that is used, of course, is the right to die with dignity, to choose one's own death and the circumstances and timing, perhaps even the means and the mode of death. There are organizations such as Dignitas in Switzerland and in Australia, a group known as Exit International, that seek not only to contend for euthanasia, but in many cases to provide euthanasia services. In Britain, the issue has become so contentious simply because there are citizens there who are taking their loved ones to Switzerland to institutions such as the Dignitas Clinic, and they are asking in advance British authorities to tell them they will not be prosecuted if indeed they take this action. The Exit International group says that it intends to reassert the advertisement and relaunch the debate in Australia. It will be interesting to see if their new advertisement actually gains airtime, but even more significantly, it will be interesting to see if this argument begins to take hold. In the United States, it already has taken hold in states such as Oregon and Washington. Initiatives in California and other major states are following a similar logic, and the question for most states here in the U.S. is when, rather than if, this debate over the so-called right to die will arrive. You know, when you look at the issue of euthanasia, it's not as if we do not know how this issue unfolds. All we have to do is look to a nation such as the Netherlands to see that the slippery slope is even slippier than we thought. It starts out with a supposed right to die for those who are suffering from a terminal illness. Before long, the illness no longer has to be terminal. And as in the Netherlands right now, even children, it is asserted, have a constitutional right, with or without a terminal disease, to demand to die and to be able to kill themselves with assisted suicide or some other form of euthanasia. You know, once you buy into this logic, it's very difficult to draw a line and to stop. If you define personal autonomy to the extreme and claim that it includes even the right to plan and plot one's own death, it's very difficult to find any limitation whatsoever on the self that is asserted as autonomous. In Great Britain, there's a very different story. In the United Kingdom, two men have been arrested for running what amounts to a renegade sperm bank. Now, the story here is really interesting, as is recorded in The Guardian once again, because this tells us something not only about Great Britain, but by contrast, it tells us about the United States as well. These two men, it turned out, earned a great deal of money. It's estimated about $500,000 through an illegal fertility company providing women with access to sperm donors. Now, this was pretty much just a put-together operation, but it was extremely lucrative. These two men started an online service. Their company, entitled Sperm Direct Limited, also known as First for Fertility, allowed men to donate sperm, and women who were seeking the sperm to gain it through their commercial enterprise, and they allowed women to choose which sperm donor would be the donor for their particular sperm. It was delivered to their home upon purchase, and obviously this was a commercial transaction. The man was paid for his reproductive cells, the women paid for the semen, And the firm, of course, took its own margin in terms of the transaction. You look at that and you say that's pretty much the reproductive revolution head-to-head with capitalism. Well, it's a little bit more complicated than that in the United Kingdom. In Great Britain, there is an organization known as the Human Fertilization and Embryology Authority, and it has the right to establish who and who may not be involved in assisted reproduction and reproductive technologies, and in particular, in the collection and the sale of reproductive cells, whether they be eggs or sperm. Now, you look at this and you realize there's something of a scandal in Great Britain. The scandal is that this was a renegade or rogue organization, an unauthorized sperm bank. Now, what makes it even more interesting when you compare this story to the situation in the United States is that we have no human fertilization and embryology authority here. This nation is, as has been noted by those in other nations, something of a wild, wild west of reproductive technologies. You do not need such a license here. What is renegade in the United Kingdom and here has led to an arrest and an upcoming trial would be absolutely without legal consequence here in the United States. Instead, here in the United States, we even have the development of designer sperm banks. Both male and female cells may be sold on the open market and transferred with or without any kind of authorization whatsoever, with or without any kind of medical supervision whatsoever. This is another reminder to us that we have entered into a new age. We are redefining what it means to be human, and in particular, what it means to reproduce, as we are allowing these new reproductive technologies, uncoupled from any normative notion of marriage or family, to lead to human reproduction and to lead to human beings, and in this case, infants, as commodities to be bought and sold. It'll be interesting to see how this trial goes in the United Kingdom, but in any event, there would be no such trial in the United States. USA Today has a very interesting story that appeared on the front page. It's about the Taliban using children as human shields in their fight with the United States, in particular in Afghanistan, in the Helmand province. The story is really very chilling. In this case, the Taliban are using children as young as toddlers to go and to collect shells in order to be recycled and rearmed, to even put armaments in certain weapons, and to collect the bodies or the wounded of those who are casualties on the battlefield. Furthermore, adolescents are being recruited into the Taliban forces with promises of such things as cheap or inexpensive Chinese motorcycles as inducements to join the Taliban. What we're looking at here is a nation that is in deep turmoil, a group, the Taliban, that is ruthless in its application of Islamic terrorism and its ambition to establish a total Sharia law within Afghanistan, Islamic rule. But what you have here is an organization, a terrorist organization, an insurgent organization that is demonstrating its lack of moral credibility by hiding behind children. Hiding behind skirts and hiding behind children is just not any way to prove one's seriousness on the battlefield. It is an effort, indeed, to show, whether they intend or not, just how much they minimize human life. When they will put children, even toddlers at risk in the theater of war in order to gain advantage, when they will put children and adolescents on the front lines hoping that that will lead the Allied forces from actually using military force, this tells us a great deal about what the American and Allied forces are really facing in Afghanistan and the stakes and what it's going to take to establish any kind of lawful order there in that troubled nation. This has happened before. Insurgency organizations and forces have often used children in this way. Desperate regimes have used children as human shields. And in this case, the desperation of the Taliban is becoming more and more apparent. There's big news out with the Washington Post this morning, indicating that for the first time ever, there are now more women graduating with doctoral degrees from American higher education institutions than men. This has never happened before. Now, of course, at the undergraduate level, this shift has gone on for some time. Right now, on most college campuses, an average of 60% of all undergraduate students are women, only 40% thus men. This is a radical shift from any kind of recent decades. What we're looking at here, though, is the intersection of the feminist agenda and any number of other issues related to economic recession, and for that matter, delayed adulthood on the part of so many young men, an aimlessness and purposelessness that marks their lives, a lack of ambition, and educators are telling us, of course, a lack of readiness for the college experience. As a college and seminary president, I can tell you that this is certainly not universally true, but it is true in far too many cases. It should embarrass us all. Now, when you look at a news story like this, the headline is simple. Report, more women than men in U.S. earned doctorates last year for first time. But you start to look at the article and you realize that the tipping point has already been reached. The story is about the fact that there are now more women graduates in 1 year than men. Now, that means you have to work backward into the pipeline to students who are now in the program. And once you do, you see that approximately 2/3 of all students enrolled in these programs are women and only 1/3 are men. That tells us as we look to the future, it's not just going to be a bare majority of these graduates who are women, but the vast majority. This points to a total reshaping of this society. It points to a reality in which we're going to find that men primarily work for women who have the higher degrees, the better educations, and are going to be in the positions of executive and managerial authority. That will be a massive change for American society. Two churches have taken significant moves to the left, and both of them are worthy of attention. Here in Louisville, Kentucky, on September the 11th, as the anniversary, the ninth anniversary of the September 11, 2001 terrorist attacks was observed, with the background being, of course, the threatened burning of the Quran by a very small church and its very strange pastor in Gainesville, Florida, a church here in Louisville, a former Southern Baptist church known as Highland Baptist Church, held what was known as an honoring of sacred texts. The Courier-Journal, our local Louisville newspaper, gave it a great deal of attention. It turns out that in this service, many different so-called sacred texts were both displayed and read. One by one, according to the reporter, representatives of each faith that included Jewish, Christian, Buddhist, Islamic, Sikh, Hindu, and Baha'i representatives stepped up to the pulpit to read aloud for a few minutes. Songs were also offered in both English and Arabic. You know, when you look at something like this, it's just another reminder to us of what happens when you abandon the gospel. You cannot include in a Christian church, in the auspices of a Christian congregation, the reading of these other texts without making very clear that you believe they stand alongside the scripture in terms of authority and, of course, in terms of gospel content. But these are churches, in many cases, as we see this kind of service or this kind of action, that have already taken significant shifts in a more liberal direction. It's just that when something like this comes up, you realize that this is an effort to make a statement. And the statement, of course, is not just to provide an alternative to the threatened burning of the Quran in Gainesville, but it's an alternative to exclusivism and the understanding that there's only one way of salvation. This church in Louisville took an action that was intended to show just how different it was from the church in Gainesville. Well, it did that, of course, but it also ended up showing how distant it is from the gospel. Similarly, in Fort Worth, Texas, the Broadway Baptist Church, another former Southern Baptist church, has informed the Baptist General Convention of Texas that it will no longer be affiliated with that organization or contribute to its causes or send messengers to the convention's annual meeting. Why? To read from this report from Associated Baptist Press, because the church, quote, doesn't want to be distracted by questions concerning the congregation's position on homosexuality, end quote. Just last year, the Southern Baptist Convention voted to sever its ties with the same congregation after the SBC Executive Committee looked into questions raised by media reports of an internal church controversy over whether to include portraits of same-sex couples alongside other family portraits in a church directory. Again, this report is from Associated Baptist Press. This is just another reminder to us of what's at stake in so many of the current controversies over biblical authority. These issues bubble up, show up, emerge, and erupt over questions such as homosexuality. It tells us a great deal when a church says that it doesn't want to be, quote, distracted by questions about the congregation's position on homosexuality, end quote. You look at that and you realize if answering a question about something that is so clearly taught in Scripture is a distraction, well, we know this church is distracted from far more than the question of homosexuality. Thanks for listening to The Briefing. You will find this program, my weekly program, Thinking in Public, and a host of other resources at albertmohler.com. You can follow me on Twitter at twitter.com/Albert Mohler. For information about the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary, go to sbts.edu. For information about Reformation 500, the first international event leading up to the 500th anniversary of the Reformation, go to sbts.edu. I'll meet you tomorrow for the briefing.